Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Coming from Arizona State University, Professor Lawrence Krauss is a science heavyweight, regularly fronting public science issues alongside his contemporaries, names such as Richard Dawkins. Well, he's been in New Zealand recently delivering public lectures discussing the challenges that journalists face in presenting science, a topic very close to our hearts. I spoke to him earlier this week. Well, welcome and thank you for coming along. One of the topics that you discuss in your public lectures is the challenge that journalists face in presenting science appropriately, say. This is something quite, you know, I'm very interested in. We like to do a lot of stories on science here at Public Address Radio, and also I've done them on the TV before.
Good for you.
The problem we face in New Zealand, to my mind, is that we don't have the population to justify full-time science reporters.
Well, you know, actually, you're not unique in that regard. Around the world, especially with the pressures on journalism, especially print journalism, you're seeing the number of dedicated science reporters being reduced. And even in the United States, most of the major newspapers and many other outlets have gotten rid of their dedicated science reporters. In the United States, there's a science writing prize given by the American Association for the Answer to Science, and three-quarters of the people who received that, I think, last year were let go. So, but
not,
I think
not valued then, I would say. Yeah.
But you know, the point, part of the point of what I was saying is that it's nice to have dedicated science reporters, but science is an integral part of our lives, and it's an integral part of politics and a culture. And so, therefore, it shouldn't be seem like such an extreme leap for reporters who aren't science reporters to cover science. But for some reason, it is, because we've divorced science from culture. We've made it appear that science is incomprehensible or uninteresting, and that that reporters who are would be comfortable. I've been interviewed by national anchors on news programs, and they're comfortable talking to prime ministers and presidents and popes and asking supposedly hard-hitting questions. But when it comes to science, they suddenly get afraid to ask any question at all. I think they feel less comfortable making simple pronouncements such as evolution is the basis of modern biology. Not most scientists believe in evolution, you know, which is more cautionary. I mean, statements, I think they'd have a hard time saying, many of them saying, well, we know the Earth is round and not flat. I think that some level of just simple comfort, not being an expert, a journalist, after all, can't be an expert in everything, but you just have to show some interest and some basic understanding. And the other problem with journalism, to some extent, is that there's a conflict. Journalists really try to find both sides to every story. But one of the great things about science is that most of the time, one side is just wrong.
this is something that I've seen time and time again with the global warming debate,
exactly.
The climate change debate, is that, to my mind, media have done some of the biggest damage in this debate, because scientists say, well, there's 99 of us say this and one of us says this. Media gets that one person on every time and gives them 50% of the airtime.
You've got it. It happens all the time, not just with climate global warming, but in my own country with the evolution intelligent design debate. They always try and find the one someone to dissent. And the problem is you can always find a PhD to say anything. You could find people who say the Holocaust didn't exist. And if every time they had a history of the Second World War, one person who was a historian and one person who was a Holocaust denier, as if they're equal, it gives the public the wrong impression. Now, fortunately, most of the public have a somewhat greater filter when it comes to history or politics, because they have some experience in the world. But when it comes to science, many of them don't. And therefore, even if they're earnestly interested in the subject, when they hear someone who sounds reasonable on one side, someone who sounds reasonable on the other, and the media present them both as if they're equal, they assume there's a controversy when there isn't. And of course, climate change, you've hit it exactly. They present this controversy that just doesn't exist.
Say you're a reporter, you're 12 years old, like a lot of the young reporters are for TV networks. Yesterday you were covering a man that got stabbed. Mm-hmm. Today you're told, do a story about global warming. And you don't know anything about it, and you've got until 6 p.m. to get that story up on air. You call someone, they say, "Oh, of course, you know it's a bunch of rubbish." Where do you start? How do you?
Well, I think what we have to do,
because that's the reality of the modern newsroom.
No, I know it is, and that's one of the reasons why, as a scientist, I spend a lot of time reaching out, and the institute I'm developing in Arizona is one of the things it does is, in fact, create programs for journalists. I think we have to provide the resources to journalists so that when they're pressed for time, they can at least go and get an accurate overview. And maybe even if they're a TV reporter, some animation, something they can, because they need pictures. And so I think that that what our good reporter should do is realize that there's a reason that accredited institutions are accredited, and they should try and build a network of sources whom they can trust. It's the same for political reporters too. Sources for who you get, even if they're not experts, they'll give you a good direction of where to go, and to realize that that you don't turn to the internet and to the most outlandish statements, but you really go to try and credible sources. And I think you have to do this if you're a journalist. You go to two or three and see if they all say the same thing, and if they do, it's probably pretty good evidence that you're along the right track. But anyway, so I think it's really important for us scientists to not only provide the opportunities I do through my lecturing and writing and TV appearances, etc., but to also provide the materials that reporters and journalists can use. And one of the things we're, for example, going to do in my Origins initiative at Arizona State is regularly hold workshops for journalists on hot button issues. Richard Dawkins and I did one on evolution, and I did one on cosmology. But we'll try and have programs where we bring in people and say, just look, this isn't for a news story. This isn't for you to cover. This is just to give you some background. And
I was going to ask you about Richard Dawkins actually, because he's been out here recently as well.
Yeah, Richard was just out here.
I don't know if you are you good friends?
We are good friends, as a matter of fact. Although we have somewhat different views.
Because you say that, or at least your media says, science is currently under attack on many fronts. Now Richard Dawkins would say that one of those fronts is religion, organized religion. Is that a view you share?
Well, I think from certain aspects of organized religion, it absolutely is, and I dealt with that in my public lecture here. There are people who are simply afraid of science, that they view science as a threat to their moral fabric, which is completely wrong, as I spent a lot of time showing. And I think organized religion is responsible for a lot of the problems, but at the root of it is not so much religion, it seems to me, as ignorance.
See, Richard Dawkins would say that it's impossible to be a scientist and a man of God.
Yeah, I know, and we've talked about that at great length, and I think the point is it's clearly possible because there are scientists. I mean, I'm not saying it's logical, but people aren't logical. You can believe two opposing things and do it very effectively. So there are devoutly religious scientists I know who are good scientists, as long as they don't let one thing affect the other. I think the point again is not religion as much as ignorance. It's ignorance is the problem of that it breeds fear, and probably the most impact I have in the United States is sometimes saying you actually don't have to be an atheist to believe in evolution. Even though from a personal perspective, I think religion's irrelevant to science. I think there's far too much time spent on this religion science interface because there is none. Most scientists go about do their work and never worry about the problem.
What is the biggest threat to science, or the biggest fallacy out there? And we've discussed global warming, and I have a feeling where you're coming from on that one, perhaps.
Yeah.
What else is out there?
I think there is this notion that somehow science. I think that the problem between with global warming and the evolution deniers and all of that is the notion that somehow science is just a story. That science is a story like any other story, like the Bible or the Lord of the Rings. It's just a story, and
it's just a theory. Evolution is
just a theory. But what they really mean by they don't understand what they mean by a theory. Theory means something very different in science than it does in popular parlance, and that's part of the problem. But science is more than just a nice description of the world, which you can accept or not accept as you wish. It is a story that makes predictions and provides us opportunities to control nature at some level. It's a story that has consequences, and therefore you're not free to pick any story. Science describes the world, makes predictions about how the world works. We test them, and when our predictions are correct, it tells us we're on the right track, and it allows us to do something. And the bottom line is that all of the major challenges, every single major challenge facing our society, political challenge that every leader here in New Zealand, in the United States, or elsewhere is going to have to deal with in the 21st century, has science at some level at its basis. And if we don't accept the world for what it is and use our knowledge as the basis of public policy, we threaten our democracy and we threaten the future. And so I think the real significance is that not recognizing what science is and also what it isn't, and that science is a tool, and it is the way to understand the world, and it's the way to impact on it. And as I said at the end of my lecture last night or the night before, that I think the hope I have is really realizing that everyone in there has an inner scientist. No matter whether they say, I don't buy science, I don't buy global warming, I don't like science, I don't, you know, it's a threat. At some level, when there's a crisis, people realize that turning to science is the way to do it. And the example I gave was in my country was, for example, with President Bush, who happened to say you should teach intelligent design and evolution and all that stuff. But when the avian flu became an issue, he said, we have to learn how fast it's mutating from birds to humans. You never heard him or anyone in his administration say, you know, it's been designed to kill us. Let's forget about it.
Yeah, we need a prayer group, quick.
Yeah. And so whenever there's a threat, I think people at some level realize that at least science is the tool to try and help us address those threats. And we're facing tremendous threats as a civilization and as a global society. And climate change is just one of them. And science provides a way to deal with those threats and an opportunity. But it's more than just technology. Science is also culture. It is part of what enriches our lives as humans. When you think about great literature or art or music, what it does is it changes our perspective, our place in the cosmos. So really, it gives us a new view of ourselves. And that's what science does. And for me, the main reason I want people to learn about science is not just so we can build better toasters or we can address the economic problems we need to address, but because it enriches their lives. It's sad to me that so many people are not aware of the amazing aspects of the universe that build awe and wonder and help us make our society worthwhile.
Do you think we're heading towards another scientific dark age, if you will? I mean, you've got the rise of you mentioned evolution of this climate change denying. I'm interested in your ideas on medical science, the rise of naturopathy and things that aren't scientifically proven. What do you think about those?
Well, I think they represent again the sort of, they're built on ignorance. They're built on the fact that the public doesn't really understand what science is, and that science is really based, first of all, on logic. And people have the tools. That most people don't think they have the tools to filter out the nonsense from the sense. But if you think about, take a lot of homeopathy where you dilute, you take a little bit of active ingredient, you keep diluting it, you could prove in the end that there are zero molecules of the active ingredient left, and how you think that that's going to have an impact. Is that likely to have an impact? Do you think the water remembers the stuff that was in it? I mean, ask yourself those questions and say what's likely. And most people have the tools to filter out that nonsense. But again, it just comes to the fact that people say, well, it's a story and conventional science believes this, but these people believe that. And it doesn't matter what you believe.
Is it on the rise?
It's on the rise. It absolutely is, because people think that different beliefs are compatible. And the point is, belief is irrelevant. What works? And that's what science cares. If scientists aren't, we don't pick some theory and like it because of its name or because it's sexy or something else. Well, to some extent we may, but we'll throw it aside if it doesn't work. All the, you know, conventional medicine, evolution, the Big Bang, global warming, these things, scientists are focusing on these things because their predictions work and lead them to new knowledge and the ability to have an impact, to make new drugs, to save lives, to create new technology. And so it's really realizing that not all things are equal, that what works matters, and what doesn't work you throw out. In fact, that's probably the greatest thing that science allows anyone. And I often tell my students that I hope that at some point in their lives they have something they truly, truly believe in profoundly in their heart that's shown to be wrong. Because in science, that's the way it works. We have a theory that we love, and then we find out it's wrong, and we throw it out like yesterday's newspaper. That's what makes science so great.
So given, as we've discussed, the decline in the media's reporting on science and the growing sort of chasm between society thinking these things and science just progressing on, is there going to be some big moment where the scientists come up in revolt, or when we all turn up with our torches and burn the universities? Where's this going to end?
Well, I hope it won't go that far. I think things go through cycles to some extent. And I think I do think that it's likely that there are many global problems that are being ignored that are going to have to be addressed. And I think my hope is that you know, it's a sad thing that some of them, hopefully before there's too much calamity, will cause people to realize that we have to take action. And I often say, I said it in my lecture, I think, in answer to a question, that one of my favorite quotes is that if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. I'm an educator. And ultimately, I believe that education is the key, that if we make people aware of the issues, that people will begin to act appropriately. And I think the big problem is that people are just simply not aware. And part of the way to make them aware is to make them less afraid. And all of those things have to be done together, and that's what I try and do.
It's Professor Lawrence Krauss, and if you found that as interesting as I did, watch the space, because Professor Krauss may be heading back down here sooner than you think. Coming up after the break, we talk to the Sea Shepherds and her make-believe band.